I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove, from the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Today my guests are Patrick and Paul from The Winter Sounds. On their 2009 album, Church of the Haunted South, this hard-working Nashville-based indie rock band explored Gone with the Wind, a novel that ended up in the band's van and was passed around from player to player on a previous tour. I caught up with The Winter Sounds back in April 2011, while they visited Lancaster for just a few hours to showcase at the 2011 Launch Music Conference. Well, joining me in the Candy Factory in downtown Lancaster, here for the Launch Music Conference, The Winter Sounds from Nashville, Tennessee. Welcome. Welcome to Lancaster.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that.
We're glad you're here. I want to talk about this the last album, Church of the Haunted South, from 2009. I want to focus on that, but before, I know that there's kind of an interesting story with this band now, and I wouldn't mind Patrick, with Patrick Keenan and Paul McKenna. Tell me the story of how this configuration of the Winter Sounds came to be and what the Winter Sounds was prior to that.
Well, prior to that, it was mainly this guy Clayton and I had been working on Church of the Haunted South together, and he actually joined the band after we released Porcelain Empire and had done some touring. So he came in between albums, and then he and I worked on some songs together, and we pulled in some different people for the recording. Then we put that out. We did a bunch of touring, and we finished a long, long, grueling tour of the West Coast last summer. And after that, he was like, I'm not going to play anymore. It's totally cool. We're good friends. And
yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool, man. Well, thank you. it was totally a good time for him because he wanted to work more on like just kind of like songwriting and mm-hmm. developing songs for other artists and stuff like that. So I just moved to Nashville because I knew I had some friends there in a lot of different bands. And I got there, and about a month later, I put an ad up on Craigslist. And I did that every day for a couple weeks. And then I met Paul, and we jammed a few times and just kind of slowly built it back. I met Ellen, and then I kind of knew Joe because Joe and I had been on tour just briefly when he was in a band called the Comfies a long time ago. We did like a week's worth of shows together and kind of just lost track of him, and then got his number through somebody else. And I think even when I called or texted Joe, his actual name popped up in my phone, and I was like, oh, well, I have your number. This is great. So, and then Ellen and Renee had gone to school together in Berkeley, and that's how Ellen knew Renee, and it came together pretty quickly. And by December, we played our first show with the new group. So
that's great. So you're back out and you're touring a lot.
Yeah, it's going very well.
Let me read a quote from some of your press materials about this record, Church of the Haunted South, reflecting the contentious and pervasive shadow cast by the culture and history of the South. Church is a mature departure from the raw aesthetic of their first record. Talk about that statement a little bit.
That sounds great.
There's a lot there, man.
You want to field that one, Paul? Oh, there's some big words in there.
That is, I don't even know
the contentious and pervasive shadow cast by the culture. Well, are you from the South originally?
Mostly, yeah. I was actually born in Chicago, but I grew up in the South. And the whole album has a theme, and the theme is it's kind of a retelling of Gone with the Wind. And the book was actually just kind of tossed around in the van for a long time. Like, everybody that was in the van would just read it, which is really weird because it's a big novel. But
sure.
I feel like I remember one time I read a quote that it's like the shortest, longest novel ever written because it just goes by so fast. It's just so well written. And I kind of got obsessed, and I was reading everything about the book and about Margaret Mitchell and all that. And I felt like when I had grown up in the South, there was a lot of stuff that once you leave the South and you get out there, you actually start to see that there's a kind of a ignorance to the South. There's a lot of like frustration with having lost the Civil War, and it's really there, you know.
Yeah.
And it's very conservative, and you know, it's the Bible Belt, and it's all those things. So I don't really know what that quote is saying specifically, but the history and the culture of the South definitely like kind of affected me. I feel like just growing up in that, and then leaving it.
Right. Know, there is. I mean, no, that makes a lot of sense. The shadow idea in the South.
Yeah.
You know, these the memories that live. You just in the North. You just don't. It just doesn't come up.
Yeah, like the North to me, like as a kid. And trying to, like, you know, have as many different or trying to see, like, all sides of it. It just was kind of a well-oiled machine. It just kind of went in and, like, whooped the South in the war and just went on to big business and big cities, you know. And so, but everybody in the South was just kind of struggling, you know, always. And, like, it's not totally true. And there's Atlanta, obviously, Nashville, I guess, and many big cities.
These are relatively new cities. They don't go back like Philadelphia.
Yeah, they were, like, called Terminus. Atlanta was called Terminus or something back then.
Really?
Yeah.
We'll talk about the making of the record for a minute, if you could. Just how it was produced, where you recorded it. You weren't in Nashville when you made the record, right?
No.
Right,
okay. It actually kind of happened twice. In late 2008, we went to Austin, Texas, and tried to record the whole album, lived there for a month, and just didn't get it finished, and just kind of had to give up on it. And, you know, we didn't really have enough money to do it that way, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we just packed up and went back to Athens, Georgia, where we had done some tracking with this guy, Asa Leffer, and he's the one who ended up recording it, and just took him all the files and kind of started over. And just when we did it there, we were able to work and just drive there and go back to work, because I was living in Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay.
So we could go down on the weekends or, you know, during the week and stay for a few days and then go back and, you know, finish it and stuff like that. So
is it self-produced for the most part?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How did it differ from Porcelain Empire? I mean, what was the process like, and how did it change as you made the second record?
Porcelain Empire was built up over a couple years prior to the recording, from like just GarageBand demos that mm-hmm. I'd done. And they were just everything was thrown in, like, that could be thought of, you know. And songs were like a little bit longer. They would have like 20 different changes, and, you know, I wasn't really thinking of it in those terms, like, this is as a song, and, you know, just anything I could think of would just go in, you
yeah
know?
Church of the Haunted South is definitely a record. It's not individual songs. It was definitely written as a record, as opposed to Porcelain Empire, which is a little bit more just
collection
songs.
Of songs.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So was there an intention while you were writing that the new songs, or the not the new songs, but the songs for the Church album, was there an intention, I'm writing this record and this is all revolving around the theme, or did you write a bunch of songs and recognize that there was a theme?
It was a little bit more intentional, like, okay. Because the at some point, I mean, like, when lyrics weren't finished, when, like, songs weren't finished, there was a handful of ideas, and they were kind of all over the place still, mm-hmm. you know, like you might have, like, a really slow song or a really fast song, but I realized that I wanted to make it kind of thematic and then tie it all together and, you know, really develop it like a story within the album, and so then it just kind of came about finalizing the lyrics and making sure that the songs actually fit together. And we had the luxury of being able to just pick from, there was a bunch of extras that just were, some weren't even recorded, so we could just kind of drop the ones that didn't really fit and kind of craft it a little bit more for, like, this is an album, like a timepiece, you know.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
And I've always heard that about Porcelain Empire, that the songs just kind of sound disjointed, or they would just, changes didn't feel natural. And part of that was because there wasn't really a band before that album was recorded. It was just GarageBand stuff. So, like, everything was just, the next part could just be, like, cut and pasted in. And then I'm like, cool, this is how we record it, you know. And this one was developed, these were much more developed, like, ideas with a group, you know. And if you look for me, I'll be singing out loud.
I'll never let you go. Let's talk about some of the songs. I want to start with the second track, Trophy Wife. Bringing some good indie rock goodness, some real energy in this song. I love it. I mean, it's got great hooks. What's the meaning behind it? Can you talk a little bit about the meaning behind Trophy Wife?
Yeah, well, in the book you have like Scarlett O'Hara, and she's kind of like the object of Rhett's affection, and she doesn't really have any redeeming qualities right away. Like, she's just kind of a princess, and I guess the idea is like, you know what I'm saying? Like, she's desired by so many because she's just a prize, you know? Mm-hmm. And, but then, you know, and they're all, you know, it's hard to get like too, I don't want to get literal with the lyrics or anything, but there's you know, a lot of references to like ballroom dances and stuff like that are
okay.
Things taking place in the book. And then, but the characters, there's kind of like some of the lines, some of like the choruses and stuff like that would be the things you would discover reading the book, that these are actual people. And, you know, but if you were an outsider and you didn't get the luxury of reading the book and you were actually living in the world and just seeing the characters from a distance, you wouldn't really know that all this was kind of going on in their head. So there's a lot of back and forth, like in all the songs, there's a line that would be something one person would say and something the other would say. And they just, as if there's a conversation.
Oh, that's great. Is that between songs or within songs?
No, like in the song, yeah. Like the lyrics. Some of the lyrics are little snippets of lines from the book, too.
Got it. Musically, there's a really interesting part in the middle where you have these textural vocals sort of swarming around right before the song kicks back in and it reaches kind of a climax. Talk about that song from a musical perspective. Is that the kind of thing that develops in the studio? Or is that the kind of thing that you do live and then you say, let's flesh it out in the studio?
That one was definitely, that part of the song is definitely like a home recording thing. Like when I would just like put too many layers on something, you know, or like I would discover I could harmonize and I would just do it, and whether it made sense or not. And it's been really hard to pull off live, I feel like, because it is just, you know, we have everybody singing, but it's like crisscrossing melodies and they run over each other and
in the
studio.
Live,
and, yeah.
But it's, I think we pull it off. The girls definitely do a good job.
Yeah, so. They're awesome singers.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Joining me today are the Winter Sounds from Nashville, Tennessee. Let's talk about the song Marry Me. Now that I have some context around where this record comes from, it makes a lot more sense. But tell me, first of all, I just want to say that the opening line, I love the opening line, Marry Me, My Love, Before the Curtains Close. I just the way it's sung and the way it's presented on the record, just it's fantastic. Tell me about that one and how it relates to the overall theme.
Yeah, the all the characters in the book were under a lot of pressure to get married, especially the girls as soon as they could. And there was the whole idea of being like an old maid, you know. And this is like somebody who might be 20 years old, might be getting too late at that time period for marriage and stuff. So the idea was like this really like kind of desperate plea to get married before it's too late, but not because you're in love necessarily.
Right.
But then again, the same thing in the song, like there was, it was a lot, it was very personal too. There was a lot of times I was reading the book, and this is how actually, it was funny because the book kind of passed over two generations of the band. Like the original guitar player, Tim, he found it in a thrift store and he just bought it and he was reading. I was like, I can't believe you're reading Gone with the Wind. And he's like, it's really good. And so I was like, okay. And then I think I got it next. And then, you know, people would come and go that were like touring musicians and stuff. And it would always be in somebody's hands, like reading it. And everybody kind of, everyone kind of enjoyed it and was really like the theme of like the band for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And, I lost my point, actually.
But I don't know, but that's very interesting visual to just imagine this indie rock band in a van touring the country reading Gone with the Wind. I mean, it's...
Yeah. But I guess going back to that song, there was still, like... Oh, I know what I was going to say. There was, like personal stuff when I would read the book that I would find in the characters an aspect of myself.
Got it.
And I think everybody did, you know, even without us, like, discussing. Like, sometimes we would talk about it and stuff. And I just felt like that just made the book, like, that much more, like, relevant to me. And then, so there would be lines in the songs that might be something that I would think if I was one of the characters, like, interacting right then, you know.
Marry me, my love, before the curtains close. I'll linger here alone, waiting for you to come. The time is right, the sun is set, they all agree. Why won't you marry? Only you and nobody you have never gotten. But all the same, I never will. Marry me, my love.
There's a musical twist in the song near the end, which starts with this sparse synth breakdown and then mixes in these different rhythms and different styles. It's like gypsy and some Spanish stuff. Where does it come from musically? How did that break develop?
I don't know. I mean, that I think the... Well, I don't know what it's called, the kind of... What is that called?
Tango.
I guess... That I don't know if whether that was ever like a deliberate thought, but I imagine that they might have danced a tango back then. but I did actually play in a gypsy punk band.
I was gonna say
for a while.
Talk about the Zydapunks, maybe.
Yeah, I played in a band called Zydapunks, and they were from New Orleans. They're still a band. They're still incredible, and they tour a lot. It's two accordion players, fiddle, bass and drums, and they just do traditional music from all over the world.
Nice.
So because of them, I got to learn and experience like all this other kinds of music.
Please.
I think the song "The Heart Is Scarlet" is, for me, it's the standout track on the record. I keep coming back to it when I'm listening to the album. I like the feel of it. I like the vocal parts and the lyrics as well. There's one line that I wanted to point out and kind of dig into a little bit, and that's "Lift your eyes to the sky and please beware, my friends, because I'm afraid that one of us might pull you under." I mean, that's fantastic. Can you talk about those lyrics a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. Well, so like so much of the book and the album is about the war and the fighting and all the people that were dying and stuff like that. So, and you know, without getting into specific parts from the book, there's kind of this universal idea that if you go to war, you could kill your friend, you know, or it doesn't really matter. You're just kind of told to kill. So, and I just kind of pictured like, you know, in like, I've seen this so many times in everything in sports and battle, and not personally in battle, but you know, it's like you have like two people of different beliefs praying for the same thing at the same time. But one of them's going to destroy the other, you know, or beat them at the game. And they're both asking for the same thing. So like, there's this kind of like universal, you know, religious theme, I guess, for everyone. And then, but without, you know, but also there's like a kind of a harsh reality of life. And, you know, I guess that was what that line kind of meant to me.
Should all these reasons lighting up the dead be greater than the war? Deliver us one by one. Lift your eyes to the sky and please beware, my friends, cause I'm afraid.
So you're in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. You're heading to a gig in Georgia tomorrow.
Yep. I did that. That's my fault.
Believe it or not, that is not usually the next stop for bands that I talk to who are in Lancaster.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Maybe Delaware would be an appropriate stopping point. No, but so that's a long drive. And I noticed your calendar is very full, so you've been touring quite a bit. Talk to me just briefly about life on the road with this band.
I love it, man. It's every time we go back to Nashville, I just have to go to work, and I'm just hanging out playing music with my friends and traveling. So I mean, it's obviously the ideal situation in life.
Yeah.
So
everyone gets along, which is like awesome.
I've never been in a band where everyone got along so well. So yeah,
everyone's really good to each other and just hard workers, and it's really cool. And like, we're all just kind of figuring it out. So you know, we might disagree on stuff, but the thing is, we know none of us really know what to do, and like we just do everything we can to try ideas and
Well, life on the road today, at least you have things like the internet to you can actually do some work, and
we can all stop in Starbucks and pull out our computers and all work on whatever we need to work on, you know.
Right.
That's very nice.
Can you give me a couple records that you just simply couldn't live without? Maybe something that influenced you when you were coming up, or maybe a new inspiration. Desert Island Disc, if you will.
Desert Island Disc. Oh, man. Do you want to start? I'd have to think on this one.
Come on, Paul.
You got this, Paul.
You put me on the spot here. It's like asking what your favorite band is.
Yeah. I got a couple I could throw out that I think are... I'll say one, and I know you've got a bunch, too. I really love Me Without You, and I just found out about them recently. And their last album, It's All Crazy, It's All False, is... maybe it might be in my Desert Island mix, but it's just interesting. It's just weird, and it's got all these instruments, and it's a folk album for the most part, but it'll still kind of have their old, like, kind of, maybe, I don't know if a post-hardcore is where their sound was, but it'll kind of go to that every now and then.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's incredible.
What about something that you grew up on, something that really made you say, I want to make music?
I was a big Rush fan, which is weird, because it was like, I was like 20 years too late, but I would like walk to school so I could have my headphones on, my Discman, listening to, or Walkman, I guess, on a tape, listening to Rush, just to add that extra amount of time. And I would just listen to albums like Farewell to Kings and 2112. I got really into like the themes, I guess, for an album through that, which is like seems so cheesy to me now, but I still think they're an incredible band. I think most people, I think that they would probably be the biggest band ever, except Geddy Lee's voice, just 90% of the people hate it. So
yeah, and he's not really an attractive man.
Yeah,
and it's, I hate to say it that way, but you know what I mean. I think that in our culture that
I think it matters. You know,
it does.
They're all just kind of dudes. You know,
yeah, they're definitely dudes, Canadian dudes.
They did well though.
Yeah, they've done pretty good for themselves.
I mean, doing fine.
I was gonna say Pet Sounds, man. One of the first albums that we ever talked about was Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of like share that common idea of that. That's the way we want it to sound, I guess. The kind of, I guess, wall of sound thing. And
yeah.
I don't know. We kind of, I think that was one of the first things we agreed on as far as music goes. So,
yeah. Paul, what about something relatively new that has turned you on lately?
Have you heard Surfer Blood? This is a band called Surfer Blood that they definitely draw some Beach Boys influence. But it's kind of like a more modern style, I guess. It's very cool. One of my favorite albums right now. So,
well, thanks so much, guys, for stopping in and talking to me about your music.
Yeah, thank you.
This is outstanding. No, I hope you have a wonderful show tonight, and enjoy your few hours that you'll be in our town of Lancaster. And good luck on the road.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
The Winter Sounds are an indie rock band from Nashville, Tennessee. Find out more about them online at thewintersounds.com. You can also link up from our website, woodstovehouse.com, where you can find show notes, listen to past episodes, subscribe to the show via iTunes, or leave feedback. This episode was recorded at the Candy Factory. The Candy Factory is Lancaster, Pennsylvania's premier shared workspace. Find out more at candyissweet.com. Around the Wood Stove is a production of the Wood Stove House. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com. .com startup is an AM emulator that you play on your Amiga 2000 simulator.